Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today we'll have the latest updates on the tragic shooting of Alfred Olongo, an unarmed African-American man shot and killed by El Cajon police, prompting protests across the city. Could more have been done to prevent this loss of life? And was the shooting justifiable or not? We'll have details on today's show. We'll also tell you why the poverty rate in San Diego has risen sharply. Then on Green Scene, hear about a new bill aimed at protecting the quality of drinking water. Learn why fire insurance rates in rural East County may soon be going down. And then on Destination East County, hear about festivals and events coming up across our region. Our newsmaker interviews today are with La Mesa Mayor Mark Arapostathis and Vice Mayor Guy McWhirter. They'll be talking about the return of La Mesa's three-day Oktoberfest this weekend, as well as what else is new in La Mesa. On Tribal Beat, hear about efforts by local Native American tribes who are banding together to support the Standing Rock Sioux effort to halt an oil pipeline in North Dakota that they fear could contaminate their drinking water. They're taking caravans of supplies to help thousands of Native Americans encamped there as winter approaches, and we'll tell you how you can help on today's show. We also want to invite El Cajon residents to attend our candidate forum for El Cajon candidates at Grossmont College on October 5th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Griffin Gate Building. With moderators from four journalism organizations asking questions of the candidates, as well as fielding audience questions, too. So if you have questions, especially now that El Cajon is in the national spotlight after that police shooting, here's your chance to hear from those seeking to represent you on the El Cajon City Council. We also invite you to listen in to our show next Monday when we'll be airing the debate we hosted among Helix Water Board candidates so you can learn where they stand on issues such as rate hikes, water quality, and the future of Lake Jennings. Meanwhile, please stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters. The El Cajon Police Department has been thrust into a national spotlight following the fatal shooting of Alfred Olongo, an unarmed black man, on Tuesday, prompting protest rallies, marches, and unrest across the city. Here's what we know so far. Olongo's sister called 911 three times seeking help for him. His family has said he was suffering a mental breakdown after the death of a close friend. It took two officers, both white, about 50 minutes to respond. According to police, Olongo was found wandering in traffic and refused to respond to orders. A short time later, one officer trained a taser gun on Olongo while the other provided cover with a gun. Police say Olongo then pulled an object out of his pocket and pointed at the officers, who both opened fire. Olongo was taken to a hospital, where he later died. The object he held was later identified as a silver vaping pen for smoking, not a weapon. Both officers have been placed on administrative leave pending outcome of an investigation. Coming on the heels of numerous high-profile shootings of black men by white police officers across the nation, the killing of Alfred Olongo has heightened racial tensions here, also raising questions over whether El Cajon is adequately equipped to handle calls involving individuals suffering a mental health crisis. A psychiatric evaluation response team was called, El Cajon officials have said, but one was not available due to being out on another call. Adding to the scrutiny faced by El Cajon officials is the fact that one of the officers involved in the shooting has been identified as Richard Gonzalez, who was demoted last year but retained on the force despite a highly publicized sexual harassment scandal. The city was sued by a woman working for the department who accused Gonzalez of texting nude photos of himself to her and propositioning her for a three-way tryst. After the victim settled her case with the city and returned to the force, she filed a new suit, contending Gonzalez is continuing to harass her on the job. An East County Magazine investigation last year found numerous sexual harassment and other serious sexual misconduct scandals at the department dating back for years. Of 122 sworn police officers in El Cajon, moreover, only 9 were female as of our investigation in April of last year. And yet, studies over several decades have shown that women officers average significantly lower rates of use of force and are better at defusing tense situations. This raises an intriguing question. If El Cajon had created a culture that attracted more women officers today, might the fatal shooting have been averted? Could Albert Alongo still be alive today if a female officer had responded, or for that matter, an African-American officer, instead of 2 white male policemen? Civic leaders have called on the community to remain calm and wait for the results of an investigation. That includes religious leaders, Supervisor Diane Jacob and El Cajon Mayor Wells. At a press conference on Wednesday, Wells also promised transparency in the investigation.
I want to acknowledge the fact that there are people out there protesting today that I understand that they don't feel heard. I understand that they feel frustrated by a system that they sometimes feel is not working in their favor. I understand that they're wanting more information and they're wanting it quickly. What I'd like to do is promise that I'm going to do everything in my power to heal the situation as quickly and as thoroughly as I possibly can. That means being completely honest and being completely truthful with you at all times.
But civil rights leaders and many community members have called for more action. They want police to release a cell phone video taken by a bystander, not just a still photo released by police that appears to show Alongo in a shooter's stance. Several have also called for an independent investigation by the U.S. Justice Department. Here's an excerpt of what Reverend Shane Harris, with the National Action Network, a civil rights group headed up by the Reverend Al Sharpton, had to say at a rally Wednesday in downtown El Cajon.
So don't think for a minute that this is over. The picture's only the first round. I've seen many fights in my life. They'll try to knock you down. And in the last inning, we will make a comeback, because it's very clear to us all that the tape that they're looking at is not a police tape. Funny thing about this whole case is they're looking at cell phone tapes to try to identify what happened, because they were too late in ordering the cameras that they need to have in their cars and on their uniforms.
If they turn them up.
Something is wrong when you got police running in taco shops and in other shops to try to grab cell phones of evidence. Something is wrong. And this has got to be identified. We need 2 things in this case. We certainly need a federal investigation, because we don't trust Bonnie Dumont.
No.
The local district attorney in this county has proven that she is not for minorities in our community, and she has not done everything she can to build better communities. Secondly, we need not only a federal investigation, but we need a clear guidance from leadership in our community. Pastors don't sell out. Yeah. Community leaders don't sell out.
Yes.
Just because they released a picture that does not identify the whole case.
Yes.
And that's why we're going to keep and stay on this until we get the facts.
That's right.
Yes.
You can sell out, but we won't sell out.
No.
We've
no.
already talked to the family. And that's why this is going to be an agenda that we're going to set forth. Let me say this. The country's eyes are on this city now.
Yes.
You said we don't have Mike Brown. You said we don't have Trayvon Martin. Well, now the nation's eyes are watching us. What are you going to do now?
Right.
Now the nation's eyes are watching, quote unquote, America's finest city. It ain't looking so fine right now.
No, it's not.
We got to expose the injustice in this county and in this city, and this will be the beginning of a national move and national tension on this city.
Yes.
Mallory Wirtz with the NAACP Mesa College branch also spoke at the rally, voicing fears for herself and other minorities after this and other use of force incidents against African Americans across the nation.
My life could very well end today, tomorrow, but that man's life was priceless. Every one of us have a life. Everyone has a purpose. And I'm just questioning why. Why are you guys watching it happen? Why aren't you doing anything? Every single day.
Yeah.
Time after time.
Right.
Emmett Till. You know.
Eric Gardner.
Other names.
Trayvon Martin.
Sandra Bland.
More names.
Exactly. The brothers up in Minnesota.
More names.
Alonzo Castile. We could go on and on with that.
That's right.
And the brother that died last night.
Alfred Alonzo.
I'm angry.
Yeah.
I'm very angry and I'm hurt.
Yeah.
I'm hurt more than anyone. I can't. That could be my little brother. That could be my twin sister at any time. And I don't know what to do. I'm scared to walk the streets every single day. I walk to school every single day. And why do I feel like I have to look behind bushes and hide behind trees? Because I could get shot or killed at any time. It's not fair at all. Every life. I bleed the same color of blood as you do.
That's right.
At the end of the day, my condolences go out to the Alonzo family and every other family affected, including mine.
On Wednesday night, protesters took to the streets in a march. Though mostly peaceful, some spilled into Parkway Plaza Shopping Center, spraying water and leading to closure of the mall overnight. The downtown car show was canceled, City Hall shut down, and freeway off-ramps closed. One man wearing a Trump hat and taunting protesters with racial slurs was chased away and nearly attacked. A memorial and candlelight vigil was held at the site where Alonzo died, outside a restaurant on Broadway Street. Community members of all races and ethnicities turned out in solidarity. Albert Alonzo was a refugee who came to the United States with his family from Uganda to escape war and violence. He found freedom in America, but also faced troubles, including convictions for drugs and later illegal possession of a weapon. But on the night he died, he was unarmed. Officers had only a split second to determine whether Albert Alonzo held a gun or something else, when during a mental health crisis he raised a silver vape pen toward them. Whether or not the killing was justifiable remains to be seen, but the loss of a young man's life has deeply impacted this community and its trust in their police department. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
The Census Bureau recently decided to double the official federal poverty level for cities with high costs of living, such as San Diego. Under the new calculations, nearly a third of all households in the city of San Diego are now living in poverty. Almost 1 in 5 children in San Diego are in families below the new poverty line, as are 32.3% of families headed by a single parent. Under the old calculations, 15.6% of San Diegans would fall below the poverty line, which is just over $12,000 for a single person and about $24,000 for a family of four. Income so low that these households would be struggling to survive even in the poorest areas of the nation, such as Alabama or Mississippi, says Center for Policy Initiatives Director Kyra Green, Times of San Diego reports. Incomes this low make surviving in a high-cost city like San Diego extremely challenging, Green concludes. Families have to make impossible choices and sacrifices just to survive. Data is not yet available on which East County cities, if any, would be considered high enough in cost of living to be measured into the newly raised poverty threshold. However, Voice of San Diego has reported that in 2015, roughly a fourth of El Cajon households, nearly 25%, fell below even the old poverty line. Some rural communities likely have even higher pockets of poverty, such as Boulevard, where a planning official has said over half the children in public schools qualify for federal school lunch subsidies due to low household incomes. So what are the solutions? More affordable housing, better paying jobs, and job training are factors that could make a difference in turning around poverty rates in our region. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. A bill just introduced in Congress would increase funding to improve safety of public drinking water systems in California and across the nation. setting the stage for stronger warnings about contaminated tap water. The proposed Safe Drinking Water Act amendments have drawn praise from the Environmental Integrity Project. Introduced after the Flint, Michigan lead-contaminated drinking water crisis, the bill would require the Environmental Protection Agency to notify residents annually about drinking water quality in consumer confidence reports. The bill would direct the EPA to issue regulations within 2 years that increase the effectiveness and understandability of consumer confidence reports. Poor warnings by states to residents with contaminated drinking water were documented in a pair of recent reports issued by the Environmental Integrity Project. Those were titled Arsenic in California Drinking Water and Don't Drink the Water. The reports revealed that over 55,000 Californians and 51,000 Texans have drinking water that for years has violated federal health limits for arsenic, a carcinogen that might also damage the IQ of young children. Warner Springs School District in San Diego is among the districts in California with arsenic-tainted drinking water. In addition to urging notification of consumers when water is contaminated, the Environmental Integrity Project is calling on federal and state governments to provide funding through grants for water filtration systems to improve safety of drinking water. The Safe Drinking Water Act amendments of 2016 would also remove hurdles that slow the EPA's setting of standards for other drinking water contaminants and set deadlines for development of new federal standards on known dangers, including lead, percolate, perfluorinated compounds, and algal toxins. In addition, the proposed legislation would provide grants for replacement of lead service lines in schools and communities, as well as funding to protect drinking water systems from saltwater intrusion and other contamination resulting from climate change and extreme weather. The bill also has language to help low-income people replace privately owned lead service lines in their homes, and the proposal would provide funds that local water utilities could use to give eligible homeowners assistance of up to $10,000 for lead line replacement.
The San Diego County Fire Authority has reached a milestone. An independent fire rating agency has informed supervisors that the County Fire Authority's capabilities for fighting structural fires now rank in the top 10% nationally. The new assessment could lead to lowered insurance rates for property owners in the County Fire Authority's vast service area. The new classification takes effect January 1st. Property owners are encouraged to contact their insurance company after the start of the new year to find out how the new classification may affect their policy. The new assessment marks a major achievement for the County Fire Authority, just 8 years after the agency first set out to transform and boost fire and emergency service levels in the rural backcountry following the devastating 2003 and 2007 firestorms. The company, known as the Insurance Service Office, or ISO, assesses the capabilities of fire agencies across the country. The ISO has issued the County Fire Authority a rating of 3 on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 representing the best firefighting protection and 10 indicating the program does not meet minimum criteria. Before the fire authority was created, independent fire agencies located in the backcountry were independently evaluated by ISO and received ratings from 4 to 10. Only about 10% of jurisdictions rated nationwide receive a rating of 3 or better. Insurance companies use these ratings to set premiums, so the better ratings may mean lower insurance rates for some property owners in County Fire Authority coverage area. The new rating reflects significant investment by the county to improve fire and emergency service levels in the rural backcountry, said Supervisor Ron Roberts. Supervisor Diane Jacob called the achievement a really big deal and the culmination of many, many years of work. The County Fire Authority service area covers 1,500 square miles of San Diego County, including rural, mountain, and desert communities. The county formed the Fire Authority in 2008. In the years since, the agency has reorganized fire services, bringing 18 largely volunteer-run departments into one agency jointly operated with CAL FIRE. The agency includes many career firefighters and a high level of training for volunteer reserves. The Fire Authority has also upgraded some fire stations to include advanced life support paramedic engines. The county has spent over $350 million on wildland, fire, and emergency preparedness since 2003. This includes adding a third firefighting and rescue helicopter and signing an agreement with the City of San Diego to deploy its night-flying firefighting helicopters as needed. The fire authority has also replaced and upgraded many fire engines and other vehicles and is building a new fire station in Boulevard. ISO ratings are used by insurance companies to establish premiums for homeowners and commercial fire insurance. The ratings are based on factors including an agency's emergency communications capabilities, firefighting training levels, equipment and staffing, as well as community water supply. The milestone comes at a critical time as the region is entering a peak fire season with an above-average potential for large fires, County Fire Authority and CAL FIRE San Diego Unit Chief Tony Meacham says. The state continues to experience a prolonged drought and is seeing unprecedented levels of tree die-offs. Fuel moisture levels are lower than they have ever been locally, Meacham warned supervisors last week. To prepare for peak fire season, county officials are urging residents to take precautions, including creating 100 feet of defensible space around their homes, clear of dead or dry brush, helping increase the likelihood that the home will survive a wildfire, and provide a safer place for firefighters to operate when defending structures from wildfires. Authorities suggest doing all yard work that requires a gas or electrical motor before 10 a.m., and not in the heat of day or when the wind is blowing, to prevent fires. Property owners can take other key steps to prepare for emergencies, including being ready to evacuate in 15 minutes, creating an emergency plan with your family, registering for the region's mass notification system, Alert San Diego, to get potentially life-saving messages on your cell phone during emergencies, and downloading the county's SD emergency app for information before, during, and after disasters. For even more tips on how to prepare you and your family and your property, visit readysandiego.org or in Spanish, at listosandiego.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Rebecca Williamson.
And this is Miriam Raftery with this week's Destination East County. We'll tell you about coming attractions, including Oktoberfests in La Mesa and El Cajon, Marshall Scotty's Scare Trail just in time for Halloween, Haunt Fest on Main, East County's first over-the-line tournament, and a tailgate barbecue cook-off.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
Willkommen! You're invited to the largest Oktoberfest celebration west of the Mississippi, La Mesa's Oktoberfest from September 30th to October 2nd. This community event is spread out over nearly six blocks in La Mesa's downtown village and features hundreds of exhibitors, family-friendly activities, German food, music, dancing, authentic outfits, games, and, of course, beer. For more information, you can visit thelamesaoktoberfest.com.
Just in time for the Halloween season, Scotty's Scare Trail will be open at the abandoned Marshall Scotty's Amusement Park in El Cajon for a full month every Thursday through Sunday from September 29th to October 30th between 7 and 11 p.m. The trail is rumored to be haunted by ghosts of former park employees. This year, you can see the bumper car carnage, slaughter trailer, and haunted park offices. Visit the frightening Ferris wheel and brace yourself as you walk through the remains of the death coaster. This attraction is not recommended for children under 10 or those subject to seizures. Pregnant women, infants, and small children are not allowed. For more information, you can visit scottyscaretrail.com.
The German-American Club of El Cajon will host its annual Oktoberfest over two weekends, September 30th through October 2nd, and again on October 7th through 9th. This Oktoberfest features a band from Germany, authentic German food from Bavarian pastries to an ox on a spit, plus German beers and folk dancers. You can dance to oompa-pa music, polkas and waltzes, and let the children enjoy a kids' zone. The German-American Club is located at 1017 South Mollison in El Cajon. To learn more, you can visit GermanClubSanDiego.org.
You're invited to step back in time and enjoy an authentic 1800 to 1840s Rocky Mountain fur traders encampment at the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous from September 30th to October 9th. Day visitors and period campers are welcome. The Rendezvous of Mountain Men includes demonstrations of primitive survival skills, including cooking, tool making, tomahawk throwing, archery, and black powder shooting. The event will be held at the Mataguay Scout Reservation in Santa Isabel. For details, you can visit LagunaMountainRendezvous.com.
Santee's Chamber of Commerce invites you to Oktoberfest, along with a party in the park October 1st at Town Center Community Park West in Santee. Oktoberfest will kick off at 9 a.m. with East County's first ever over-the-line tournament. Teams of three can sign up to participate in the double elimination style tournament, which will include both a men's and women's division. Attendees can then head over to Party in the Park from noon to 4 p.m. to cool down with refreshments in the beer garden, get lunch from food trucks and vendors, and jam out with continuous music courtesy of DJ Eddie V. Both events are for ages 21 and over. For details, you can visit santeechamber.com/OTL.
Santee Lakes invites you to Stock Zilla on October 1st and 2nd when all seven lakes will be stocked with 3,500 pounds of catfish. There will be tagged fish and surprise giveaways. The most stocking will be in Lakes 6 and 7, which are reserved for campers. For more information or to reserve a campsite, you can visit santeelakes.com.
Marty Stewart, a member of the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville, Tennessee, and a multiple Grammy Award winner, will bring his band's blend of traditional country, honky-tonk, and rockabilly music to downtown El Cajon at Prescott Promenade Park on Friday, October 7th from 5 to 8 p.m. Stewart is the former lead guitarist for Johnny Cash. He played bluegrass mandolin for Lester Flatt at age 13 and later performed with Willie Nelson and other well-known country stars before gaining fame on his own. Bring your dancing shoes to dance the night away under the stars. For more information, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
Heartland Fire invites you to bring the kids to an open house at Fire Station 6 in El Cajon on October 8th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. You can meet the firefighters, see emergency vehicles, safety and health displays, and more. For more information, you can go to heartlandfire.org.
You're invited to fire up your barbecues and get your best recipes ready. The 7th Annual Spring Valley Tailgate Barbecue Festival is looking for participants in its annual barbecue competition. This event is sponsored by Cali Comfort Restaurant and the Marcel Walchef Youth Empowerment Organization to raise funds for youth sports. The barbecue competition will be held on Sunday, October 16th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Troy Street in Spring Valley outside Cali Comfort's restaurant. Besides sampling barbecue, you can also visit a beer garden, shop at street vendors, enjoy live music, and plenty of family fun. To learn how to enter your amateur barbecue team, you can call 490-0684 or visit calicomfortbarbecue.com. That's CaliComfortBBQ.com.
The 5th Annual Haunt Fest on Main will take place on Main Street in downtown El Cajon on October 21st from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. Costume contests will be held at the Main Street stage. There will also be carnival rides, crafts, games, a car show, candy challenge, kids zone with outdoor movies, face painting, a pumpkin patch, inflatables, rock wall, and performances by local dance groups. In addition, this Halloween-themed event features live music on two stages, including Out of the Ashes with Linda Ray from 5 p.m. to 7:15 p.m. and The Amazing 80s All-Stars from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. For more information, you can check out hauntfest.org.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in La Mesa. Today we have two very special guests. I'm honored to have La Mesa's mayor, Mark Rapostathos, better known as Dr. A.
Thank you for having me.
And Councilman Guy McWhirter. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us. I'm looking forward to it.
So today we're going to be talking about Oktoberfest, the biggest event of the year for La Mesa. That's going to be coming up this weekend, as well as some other exciting things in La Mesa's future. So a little bit of background. The Oktoberfest is a longtime festival in La Mesa. It's the biggest one west of the Mississippi. And a couple of years ago, when they had the streetscape improvements last year, the Oktoberfest was held despite all of that. But, you know, the merchants, it was a difficult year for them, and they weren't able to make a repayment to the city. So this year, the city is taking over and running the event themselves, and there's some big changes in store. So can you tell us, first of all, the dates of the event and where people can find it?
The dates of the event are going to be Friday, September 30th, Saturday, October 1st, and Sunday, October 2nd, and it will be right downtown La Mesa on La Mesa Boulevard from Spring all the way up to 4th Avenue.
Very good. Now, last year's was just a one-day event. Usually it's been multiple days in the past. This year it's back to 3 days. Tell us what people can expect.
Last year, actually, it was only 2 days.
Let me do a redo on that.
Sorry.
So last year, they cut it to just 2 days with the budget. This year, it's back to three. Tell us what people can expect.
It will be an Oktoberfest that starts a little later than had been starting in the past. On Friday, Oktoberfest will begin at 4 p.m., the official kickoff with the Burgermeister and the first tapping of the keg.
And I understand the mayor will be there tapping the keg.
I will be there. Hopefully the entire council will be there, and we'll be there at 5 p.m. kicking
it's
that off.
Tough job, but somebody has to do it.
I will swing my hammer as hard as I can. I don't personally drink at all, but I will be there for everyone else that is enjoying the beer and everything else. And so that's going to start, and the event will run on Friday until 10 p.m.
Right.
And then on Saturday, it starts at 10 a.m. and runs until 10 p.m. And on Sunday, it begins at 10 a.m. and runs until 6.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about the entertainment?
All right. I'll do my best on the entertainment. First of all, maybe going back to the changes that we've had in the past.
Yeah.
In the past years, we've had different organizations who have put on the Oktoberfest.
Correct.
This year, there were some people that thought, since the streetscape and the other challenges we had, we should take a year off. But since we've been running this since 1973, or it's been running, we did not want to take a year off. So the city decided to step in with the full agreement of the city council, and we started looking for an organization or group that would be able to handle the Oktoberfest.
Yeah, now I understand you hired an outside management group to make sure it's professionally run.
We did. It's somebody that has had years of experience in doing Oktoberfest and other large events. They are EventWorks, and I believe they're out of Orange County. So they have met with us and the city management team numerous times to make sure that this Oktoberfest would not only be successful, but it would be unique and more similar to some of the Oktoberfests that we've had in the past.
So does that mean more authentic German attractions that people can find? It's not going to be, you know, booths of people selling cruises and realty and whatever else that we've sometimes seen occasionally.
You are correct. We've really tried to minimize the commercial booths. We're trying to bring in a more German flavor. Many of the things are going to be kind of, what would you say, German-themed. We're hoping to have more crafts, and we were a little bit worried about how many booths we'd be able to have occupied.
Yeah, how's that going?
It went better than we thought.
Great.
We set up originally, we had 100, and then we actually had to create room for, I'm guessing, about 30 more.
Wow. That's very good to hear. Good for the city, good for the city coffers. Now, I understand one of the reasons for the city running it is, one, you know, to make sure that
as a public benefit, that it's still there, that people can enjoy the festival for the community. And secondly, that if it does go well financially, that it would actually be the city reaping the profits. Of course, if it didn't go well, I guess the city would have the losses. But does it look like, is it too early to tell? Does it look like it's going to be
I think for the city, what we're looking for is a break even. And obviously the management team for the city is looking for a break even. So it's not going to cost the city any money. But the company that we hired obviously needs to meet all their costs, and they need to make money, and they're in business to do that. We took it over this year just for some history. In the past, it had been run either by the Merchants Association or one of the Chambers of Commerce, East County Chamber or La Mesa Chamber. And last year, the Merchants Association was not able to pay their bill. We've had to put in place a collection agency through the city attorney. Mm-hmm. So through the ordinance in La Mesa, if you're delinquent in any funds, you may no longer pull permits.
Yeah.
And so the Merchants Association is no longer a viable option. We're still, our collection agency is still working on retrieving the money for the city. We were not going to do an Oktoberfest like the vice mayor said. We had enough positive feedback from the community. We went out and tried to take some straw polls from people, and we were out during the town hall meeting, and people said that they would like this to continue. Obviously, the new businesses that are opening downtown would like this to continue as maybe a kickoff to showcase. And so we took it over. Our goal is that some other organization, maybe this new downtown business organization, will become strong enough and viable enough to hand off this organization, because the city does not want to be in the business of running events.
Sure. Now, to be clear, the old merchants group that ran into troubles was the La Mesa Village Merchants Association. Now there's a new group called the La Mesa Village Association, without the word merchants. And it sounds pretty exciting. They've got a bunch of restaurateurs coming in, and Aaron Dean is heading it up, who's got a lot of business smarts and a lot of personal stake in that. He owns several of the new businesses coming in. There also were some people who raised concerns about seeing a few of the past board members from the old group as founding members, although none of them are officers. So are you confident that the new group has what it takes to make Oktoberfest and other events a success in the future?
I was with them in the very beginning when they were deciding about coming up with an association. Mm-hmm. Since I've known Aaron Dean, I talked to him and explained kind of the past history of the Merchants Association and the need that we felt to have a vibrant downtown. Mm-hmm. So he got involved, and he started talking to other of our store owners on La Mesa Boulevard. And so they slowly started to get kind of a brain pool and decide what would be best for the city of La Mesa. Word got out of what they were trying to do, which created more interest, and a large number of people in the village decided that they would like to participate and support it. Now, if you don't mind, I'd like to go back and answer the questions that I did not answer prior to this.
Sorry.
No, it was my fault. You were asking about some of the events that are going on.
Yes.
One of the exciting things to present to everyone is that the Oktoberfest in La Mesa really is a family activity. There's tons of food for all ages. If you're diabetic, it might not be the best place to be, but there's one. There's a kid zone. We did not have this last year. We have it this year. There are also two beer gardens. One of the things we discussed is we wanted to make sure that EventWorks used our local merchants as much as they could.
Very good.
So we have a craft beer garden, which is going to be some of our local breweries.
Oh, nice.
And
so
wineries,
a combination
too.
Of German beer and then some local craft breweries and wineries.
Exactly. And then we have our other beer garden, which is located in the Allison parking lot. So it's not just for adults to come, and that's one of the things I've always enjoyed about Oktoberfest, is to see parents come with their kids.
Can people come dancing to the music?
Of course. There's going to be music. There's going to be, I think, a couple of bands, the regular Oompa. And so we have a lot of talent that's going to be presented.
Very good. Well, it sounds like a very exciting event. It's a long time La Mesa, and I'm personally glad to see La Mesa retaining the tradition there. Now, I understand there are some future events planned. What's on the horizon?
Along with the car show that we brought back, it wasn't going to, wasn't planned to happen because there was no Merchants Association in place. Mm-hmm. We took that over. We scaled it down. to make it cost effective, and we were able to get sponsors, and we were able to underwrite it to mitigate the cost to the city. So that was the month of July and August. We are going to have a winter event, and this year we pitched it out, and this new Downtown Business Association has taken up the mantle, and they want to put on this winter event.
So it's in the past, it's always been called Christmas in the Village. Are they going to have a different name, and any changes from what we've seen in the past?
I think they will have some changes. I think they will rebrand it because they would like to make it their own. Mm-hmm. I'm speculating, of course. I haven't talked to them specifically about the name of it. We've gone around, and have said that's a possibility to rebrand it so it becomes theirs. It's still going to be the same type of event, a Christmas event in the winter. It's going to be the 10th of December. Mm-hmm. On the 9th of December, the city will be sponsoring and hosting an event that we hosted last year, where we have a lighting ceremony in the downtown.
Oh, tree lighting.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be tree lighting, but it's also going to be a lighting of our downtown lights.
Very nice.
We haven't had a chance to show them off. They're LED lights, and they can change multiple colors.
Oh, what fun.
Green, red, make them look like winter, holiday, yeah, Christmas colors. And so that's going to be called La Mesa Shimmer. That will be on the evening of the 9th of December.
Beautiful.
And then the next night will be the winter event. And depending on how well this organization does, I think it might answer your other question. Are they a viable source to handle events? We will know after that. We have a lot riding on that, or they do.
Very exciting. Well, obviously, the more the public, I suppose, turns out and, you know, shows some support for the idea of keeping these festivals, hopefully the more successful they'll be, and the more they'll be able to offer these in the future.
I would also like to share, when you asked the question about other future events, one of the reasons that we developed the subcommittee on the city council is for each member of the city council to be on a subcommittee to focus on different areas of La Mesa. The one that Mayor and myself are on is the events and activities of downtown La Mesa and the Village.
Nice.
We spent about $7 million to get streetscape taken care of through grants and other issues.
Yeah.
And now we want to kind of showcase it. We have wiring, we can do bands, we can do musicals down there, we can have a variety of activities, and that's what we want to do. We want to continue to bring the vibrancy into downtown La Mesa.
Well, that sounds very exciting. And for those that haven't seen it, they also have the new Centennial Legacy Project that's finished now, where they have the gazebo and the snail statue. For those that don't know what that's all about, it's named after the Helix snail, for which Mount Helix is named, believe it or not.
Helix High School as well.
My alma mater.
Mine too.
There you go. That's right. Well, it sounds like it's going to be a very exciting weekend with a lot of fun. I'm definitely going to come out myself and get some of that bratwurst and so forth. What else would you like our listeners to know that I maybe haven't asked you about yet?
The main purpose Vice Mayor McWhorter and I, the reason we started the subcommittee was that the downtown belongs to the people. And you do see people during the weekends walking and getting coffee, walking their dogs, walking and seeing their neighbors. And that's the type of city we'd like to see, a walkable city.
Yeah.
We've invested in sidewalks through our Safe Routes to School program. We like the idea of that the downtown be a hub. We know that there's other interests in the city, and there's people that live in North La Mesa and West La Mesa, and the downtown is not their biggest priority. But since we have it now, and mm-hmm. we took so much time to remodel the streets and put in the infrastructure, we'd like to see events and have that be the gift to the city from the city to the citizens, because I think the city needs to be more than just governing and fixing streets and fixing streetlights, and that the citizens should expect from their government something else.
Yeah, and La Mesa is such a nice, historic downtown district. It's more than a century old now, and it really has that sort of small town feeling to it still.
And as we move forward, I think that you're going to see more cultural events that promote the arts as well in the downtown area.
That would be lovely. Tell us a little bit about some of the new businesses that are getting ready to open.
All right. Starting at the one end, we have Sheldon Service Station. It's actually going to be a very nice coffee shop.
I was going to say, it's not a gas station.
Yes. Well, he got his name because when that used to be a gas station, it was known as Sheldon's. So he wanted to keep the name and kind of keep a historical situation on that. If you continue to move down, you'll notice that where Rick's Automotive or Keating's Automotive used to be. It's fenced off. There is going to be a multi-use building going in there. It'll be a three-story building. The bottom will be retail, and the top two will be condominiums. So it's our first downtown mixed use, so it's going to be very interesting to watch.
Very exciting.
Continue to move west on that side of the boulevard. You'll come across Boulevard Noodles. People ask me, is it Thai? Is it Japanese? Korean?
Yeah, what is it?
I have no idea. All I know is that it's noodles.
If you like noodles, check it out.
I am sorry.
Okay.
And then right next to it is going to be known as Four Penny Inn. Mm-hmm. And in talking to the person that's developing it, it sounds like it's going to be a Western European British little cafe. So it's going to be a nice blend to us.
It's the inn. It's almost like a tavern then.
That's what I understand, but they're still in the process of getting it ready. Boulevard Noodles should be opening the beginning of October, and I'm not sure. Continuing down that side of the street, crossing Spring Street, you have where San Filippo's used to be. It's now called, and you'll help me with that one,
Farmer's Table, and it's a farm-to-table restaurant.
Yeah, I know a lot of people have told me they can't wait for that to open. Yeah,
so that's pretty exciting. Mm-hmm. Coming back on the other side and heading east, you have Public Square, which is another coffee shop that recently opened.
Right.
So I've been by them a couple times.
And that's where Cosmos used to be.
Correct. And they are packed, which the enthusiasm for what's going on in downtown La Mesa is wonderful.
Nice.
You move continually that way. There's a couple of vacant spaces that are actually leased, and so far I'm not allowed to tell what's going in there.
So. I heard a little rumor. I'm just kind of curious that the place where the antique store just went out, it's been being eyed by maybe a steak place. Is that?
I haven't heard that one.
Don't know. Well, we'll have to just wait and see, I guess.
This time I'm going to have to look to you to get information on downtown.
there you go.
And then the final one that I think of, if you come around behind Bobo's, there's the Coin House. And that seems to be a very popular hangout in the evening.
Is that owned by Cone Restaurants?
It is.
Yeah. Very interesting that we're having one of the best-known restaurateurs from the Gas Lamp in downtown San Diego now has two restaurants here in downtown La Mesa.
Well, I know when we talk about downtown La Mesa, it sounds self-promoting, which it is, but we're very happy to see the things that are developing in La Mesa. Mm-hmm. There has been a buzz for a couple of years about a revitalization and a renaissance in La Mesa, mm-hmm. and we're excited to see a lot of that coming to fruition.
Well, it certainly helps the tax base, and you know, it boosts the sales tax, and it also provides, I think, more attractions that many people who live here enjoy, as well as even people perhaps from outside La Mesa who may live in outlying areas, Spring Valley, Lemon Grove, that don't have so many restaurants and attractions to come to. So, is there anything else that you would like to add?
Just don't want to leave out the people in the other areas of La Mesa. We have, on West La Mesa, we have Starbucks Coffee. They seem to be popping up everywhere. Mm-hmm. They're going to be adding a new location at Yale and University, just across the street from Helix. It's going to be a drive through, and they're going to redevelop a property that had been a dog grooming and a nails and hair establishment. And the design looks wonderful. I think it's going to help with property values there and also help the area. It's nice to have a corporate person coming to that part of La Mesa and taking a risk. Also on the campus of La Mesa Arts Academy, the Boys and Girls Club, a $9 million project will be coming there. It'll be on the campus. It'll serve the children of the school during school hours, and it will serve the community during the times of 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. It's an area that desperately needs a community center, Boys and Girls Club. And so the children that live in that area are now going to have a place to go. And it's an area that's challenged economically. And there's a lot of government housing there. And those children need a place to go, and it's going to help them.
Yeah, and you've done so much work with kids yourself with all of your involvement in community theater when you're not busy running the city as mayor, as well as being a school teacher. So, is there any talk, by the way, about, you know, bringing more theater or more galleries or anything into La Mesa?
Well, there are some talks about bringing in some art galleries, also working with the Foothills, the Art Association, and we have the La Mesa Art Association. We're working with those groups to bring more events that highlight business and also highlight the arts. And obviously my dream has always been to bring a performing arts center into La Mesa. I need to probably alter that mm-hmm. and think about a downtown civic center / library performing arts center, something that can satisfy all the needs.
That's a wonderful dream. Would that be a small theater, or would it be something larger like we've seen out at ECPAC?
I think it would be something smaller. I mm-hmm. think that through my history in the theater, larger venues are wonderful, but the seats tend to be unused. I think that if we had a theater that sat between 300 to 500, it's better to sell out every night.
And
I think having that gathering place for the arts and for speakers and, mm-hmm. and things of that nature would really benefit the citizens. And whether I'm with the city or not, that's something that I, as a citizen of La Mesa, a lifetime resident, I'd love to have.
Sure. What about Grossmont Center? What's going on there with the, you know, the lease coming due? What are we going to see over there?
All right. This is based upon conversations of maybe over a year ago. The Cushman family, after a 50-year lease to Grossmont Center to an outside company, has taken it back, and they are now in charge of Grossmont Center. We've heard different topics going in, one regarding a facelift, the other one regarding maybe a small hotel. But there were a lot of people that had listened to rumors saying it was going to be torn down and put condominiums there. That has never been a topic that we've heard of.
Yeah, I know a lot of people were not wanting to lose our only regional shopping mall.
No, but there's also one other thing dealing with construction that might be beneficial for some people to know mm-hmm. is University. If you've driven down University, you've seen a lot of road work going on.
Yeah.
What happened is our city staff got grants the way they did for downtown La Mesa to improve University, to put in more trees, to update the median, to make it safer areas to walk. So we're really impressed with what's going on down there, and it also helps increase what's going on, the walkability.
Also with the University, just to add on, it was a storm drain project as well. The trees that had been there, unfortunately, had grown into the utilities in the storm drain. We were required to change that. So we did take out trees. All of the trees that were taken out will be put back. New species of trees that possibly are not as invasive, and an additional 50 trees along the sidewalk to provide shade to pedestrians will be placed in. So, again, I agree with the Vice Mayor. It is an overall look. It's not just the downtown. We're trying to bring the entire city along and make it more, bring it into the 21st century.
Very exciting. Well, we are out of time, but just to wrap up, we want to remind everybody that the city's three-day Oktoberfest is starting tonight, this Friday night, and it'll be going through Saturday and Sunday. And you come out on Friday night, you just might see your mayor and city council members out there at the keg tap at the beer garden. So I want to thank both of you, Mayor Rapostathos, or Dr. A, and Vice Mayor Guy McWhirter, for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thanks, Miriam. We enjoyed being here.
Okay.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Tribal Beat report. Winter will soon bring bitter cold to the Standing Rock Sioux encampment in Cannonball, North Dakota, where hundreds of Native American tribes have sent thousands of people now encamped to stand against the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline. Barona tribal member Bobby Wallace has been organizing relief supplies gathered by local tribes to support that effort. Speaking last week at an activist San Diego meeting in San Diego, Wallace told of the reactions when he arrived with that first caravan of supplies for the three camps at Cannonball. He said, "People had tears in their eyes. People hugged us. They were grateful," he added, "to know that people far away cared." Members of nine local Native American bands participated, including support from nearly every Kumeyaay tribe, including Barona, Viejas, tribes as far north as Los Coyotes in the mountains and as far east as the Kishan in the desert. The next caravan departs October 8th. Supplies urgently needed include blankets, wood stoves, and warm clothing. Without that, Wallace says, those in camps may freeze. They are only protected by teepees. Also needed are school supplies for children at the camps. If you have items to donate or wish to donate money for the Standing Rock Sioux Legal Defense Fund, you can call Bobby Wallace at 619-318-2643. The Bernie Sanders Brigade at San Diego State University is also gathering supplies locally for the Barona-led relief effort. Wallace says he visited the site. "Who puts a pipeline right on the Missouri River?" he asks, reflecting that he felt great sadness at that site. He and others standing up for the Standing Rock Sioux believe water belongs to the people, a resource vital for life. Those gathered in South Dakota call themselves water protectors, not protesters. On Wednesday, Wallace watched with sadness as video of arrests at the encampment spread across social media. "Nobody has weapons," he said, of the tribal members being arrested by heavily armed officers and sprayed by tear gas or another chemical from a plane overhead. "My hopes would be to take into consideration these are people trying to have a ceremony that care about their water. The water is for everybody," he says. A rally to support the Standing Rock Sioux will be held at Mission Beach on October 30th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. on the grass across from the roller coaster. An earlier rally in Agua Caliente drew hundreds. Wallace believes it's important to take a stand, noting that water poisoning is happening in many places due to fracking, oil lines, mining, and pollution. He is also outraged at the desecration of tribal burial grounds by the Navy at its Naval SEAL training ground in Coronado. "They are crushing up my ancestors," he says. Olympia Beltran from Sonora, Mexico, also spoke at the activist San Diego meeting, telling how the Mexican government rerouted a river and took water away from the Yaqui people. She said a decision soon will determine if oil companies will be allowed to inject chemicals into an aquifer in San Luis Obispo. Another issue is local. The Regional Water Quality Control Board will be meeting soon over issues involving NASCO and another polluter failing to clean up the waters of San Diego Bay as promised, a place that in the past served as calving grounds for gray whales. Beltran wants to use Standing Rock to draw attention to water issues in California. Wallace wants to create a hub locally to share ideas and grow a movement to fight against the Dakota Pipeline as well as other projects that destroy clean water or threaten Native American values of protecting the earth. "We all need to collaborate. Everybody working together," he says, urging the public to friend him on Facebook, take messages there to heart, and share on social media. Bobby Wallace is no stranger to involvement in big events. He's worked with the co-founder of The Longest Walk, a cross-country trek organized by Native Americans. The next walk leaves in February from Alcatraz, arriving in Washington, D.C. in July to draw attention to domestic violence. Wallace believes the water defenders are having an impact. Earlier this month, President Barack Obama ordered a temporary halt to construction of the pipeline section most objectionable to the Standing Rock Sioux and called for other actions to better provide for Native American voices to be heard in decisions involving energy projects. That decision came after tribal members put their lives on the line, blocking bulldozers at the pipeline site until the company's security guards attacked tribal members with dogs and pepper spray. The Standing Rock gathering has swelled dramatically since Wallace's first visit, growing from about 1,500 to now over 10,000 by some accounts, the largest Native American gathering since Wounded Knee. For Wallace, the need for action is critical, leaving no time to rest. "I'm tired for a long time," he admits, but he concludes, "I can sleep when I die. Maybe we're going to start something right here and grow it into something big." This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.